to TTM Cast, the podcast for the TTM Autograph Collector, sponsored by SportsCardForum.com, the ultimate in sports card trading and discussion. And now, here's our host, Jeff Baker.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of TTM Cast, the podcast for the TTM Autograph Collector. My name is Jeff Baker, and I'm your host, and wishing everyone a happy new year for our first show of 2020. That's right, folks, we made it to Season 2, and we've got a lot of things planned for 2020, a lot of fun interviews scheduled. We've got a lot of things going in regards to the hobby, and hopefully you'll join in and provide us feedback, let us know how we're doing. If you're interested in being on the show in a future show, let me know. Send me an email at ttmcast@yahoo.com. Once again, my email is ttmcast@yahoo.com. If you have any feedback or any interest in being in a future show, just please let me know. We have a fun and interesting interview coming up for you with Mr. Paul Stewart. Paul is a member of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. He has an interesting career in terms of being a former NHL player. He was a hockey player, NHL hockey player for the Quebec Nordiques, and he was a referee in the NHL for many years. And we talk hockey, we talk collecting, we talk autographs, and it's a pretty interesting interview. So hopefully you enjoy our interview with Mr. Paul Stewart coming up. As always, you can find our podcast all over the place, anywhere podcasts are located, on Spotify, on Podbean, on Google Play, on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. We are on TuneIn. If you have an Alexa device, all you have to do is say, Alexa, play TTM Podcast, and you can hear this podcast and all our previous podcasts as well. So hopefully you can spread the word and let people know about this fine podcast. We are on, we have a forum on sportscardforum.com. So please check that out. And all right, let's get on with the show. Our first segment, as always, is Baker's Dozen, which is kind of a brain dump, what's been happening in the hobby and that I've noticed in the last couple weeks. So without further ado, our next show will be Sunday, January 19th. Today is Sunday, January 5th. We're recording it today after sad. My New England Patriots getting knocked out of the playoffs in the wild card game yesterday. Derrick Henry was fabulous, and the better team won. So congratulations to Tennessee, Mike Vrabel and Tennessee Titans. And it's been a weird year for the Patriots this year. We started out really on fire and then kind of fell apart. So maybe next year, hopefully Tom Brady's back. And for us Patriots fans up here in New England, the football season ends early this season, and we don't get to enjoy another Super Bowl with our team. As always, I want to wish everyone, as the first show of the year, Season 2, wishing everyone a happy 2020. I've got a nice, fun show coming up in Cranston, Rhode Island. It'll be the second year attending the show for me. I went last year and picked up a bunch of great stuff and got some autographs and found a couple of guests for future episodes. So I'm heading down to Cranston, Rhode Island for the show February 1st and 2nd, which is Super Bowl weekend. I think I'll be going down on Saturday the 1st. The autograph guests have not been announced yet, but looking forward to attending the show again in Cranston, Rhode Island in a couple of weeks. I will actually going to the Red Sox Winterfest out in Springfield in, I think, 2 weeks. So I will report on that on the show on the 19th, but I'll be going out for that for a night and checking that out. Hopefully we'll get to get a few autographs, and I don't know, you never know, maybe we'll grab a guest or two for a future show. So we've got that coming up. I also want to recommend everyone go check out Sports Collectors Digest. They have a new website, and it's pretty cool. They've got it all sectioned off now, and you can find interesting articles about different things that you're interested in. They actually have a section for autographs. So check out Sports Collectors Digest. .com. I highly recommend that. And if you haven't checked out my article on Sports Collectors Daily, I had an article on Sports Collectors Daily a couple weeks before Christmas, and you can check that out. It was gifts to get your collectors, or inexpensive gifts to get your collectors in your life. So check that out if you haven't checked out Sports Collectors Daily. So that's about it. Kind of a quiet week in terms of with the holidays and things going on. No new big releases coming up, and nothing, you know, people have been getting some returns, but nothing earth-shattering. So that kind of wraps up Baker's Dozen. And on to our Vern Rapp Minute. Vern Rapp Minute is dedicated to Mr. Vern Rapp, who passed away after I had sent him out a... I didn't realize they had passed away. I had sent him out a TTM request, so I do this as a service to my fellow TTMers to let them know some of the people in sports and celebrities that have passed away, so they don't send out TTM requests to these people, and our condolences to their families. Just kind of running down a list who passed away in the last couple weeks. Andy Hassler, who was a pitcher for many teams back in the 70s and 80s. He pitched for the Angels and Royals and Red Sox, to name a few. And he was a kind of a lefty specialist. He passed away on Christmas Day. And he's kind of one of my contemporaries in terms of people that I rooted for. So sorry to lose Mr. Hassler, who I know was a friend of the hobby and was always signing. We lost Mr. John Larson, who was a great friend to the hobby as well. Obviously, he pitched the only perfect game in World Series history in 1956. Hopefully, you guys saw on the Baseball Network, MLB Network, that they did a special recapping the game, and they had an old interview with Bob Costas and Don Larson and Yogi Berra were in the studio. So it was kind of interesting to see and kind of neat to watch an old broadcast of a game and see how it differs from today, and see how things actually carried away over. So we lost Mr. Don Larson. Don was a great friend of the hobby and always willing to sign through the mail. We lost Sam Mychek, who was the coach for the Cincinnati Bengals, and he was also very willing to sign through the mail. I got him about a year ago in on a sports card set card. We got pro set card. Sorry, pro set card. And I thanked him for. Signing. He was always a great friend of the hobby. We lost Mr. Coach Sam Weich. We also lost Don Imus, who was a Radio Shock Jock. He was on FAN in New York, and he was broadcast all over the country, and he was one of the leading radio personalities for the last 20, 30 years, and I know with him and Howard Stern were kind of going back to back, hand in hand against each other, and Don Imus recently passed away, so we lost Mr. Imus. And lastly, we lost David Stern, who was instrumental as commissioner for the NBA for over 30 years, and he oversaw the ABA merger, and he was involved with bringing the NBA up to what it is today, with the Bird Magic era, and also through Michael Jordan era, and here was really driving force, and understandably, a very powerful person, a very important person for us NBA fans. So we lost Mr. David Stern. My condolences go out to all their families. It's sad for the loss. And now just to go run down returns, I haven't been sending out anything for probably a month. I've been kind of waiting in terms of I've had some health issues and with the holidays coming up, so I figured I'd just wait. I'm going to start sending out again next week, but I have been getting returns trickling in. So I got four cards from Rick Miller, who was on my Archie Manning list. Believe it or not, this took probably almost 2 years to get back. But I got a 1976 top, tops, a 1979 tops, a 1977 tops, and lastly, for my set, I got 1978 tops. So I got three cards returned from Rick Miller. I think they only sent him two of them. So he was kind enough to include a couple extras. That took probably 2 years. I got a Louis Tion. Fan favorite card, I guess, or I don't know. It's a, it looks like 1974 set, but it's a like a Topps Heritage card or whatever, but it's really cool. And he signed this for me after about a year and a half, so I'm very happy to get that. I got Jason Garrett, who I think is still the coach for the Dallas Cowboys, but not for too much longer. I got a Jason Garrett, rookie card on a pro set card for 1991, and very pleased to get that. That one took about, I don't know, maybe a month. I got a couple cards for my 1992 game day set. I got Brad Muster. He personalized it for me, which took probably about 4 months. And I got Steve Young, and this one took probably about 8 or 9 months. So I've got I got two more for my game day set. I'm at about 200 for my game day set, and I'm at approximately 300 for my 1978 set. So very happy about that. I also picked up, I purchased a couple cards. I got an eBay card for Christmas. So I got, I purchased a 1978 Don Gullett card. I was a big fan of Don Gullett in the day. Got it for a dollar or two. So very pleased to add Don Gullett 1978 to my personal collection and working towards set. Well, that wraps up returns for the last couple weeks. Hopefully I will start getting out some more requests out in the mail in the next week or two, and I've got a bunch of stuff that I want to get out, so I will keep you posted. And now on to our final segment of the show, our interview with Mr. Paul Stewart. Mr. Paul Stewart is a member of the NHL U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. As I said, he was a player with the Quebec Nordiques, and he also was a referee for many years. So hopefully you enjoy my interview with Mr. Paul Stewart.
This week's interview is brought to you by SportsCardForum.com, the ultimate in sports card trading and discussion.
Joining us on the TTM Cast hotline from Massachusetts is United States Hockey Hall of Fame inductee and former NHL and WHA player and recent author of You Wanna Go, Mr. Paul Stewart. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Paul and I met at the recent Sports Collectors Card Show in Wilmington, Massachusetts, and you had a big presence there at the show, and everyone was really interested in talking to you, and we'll talk a little about your career and your book, and I thought it'd be great to talk to you on the podcast today. So welcome to the program. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. The show in Wilmington was outstanding. I had an opportunity to not only meet you, but many other people who have the same interests as I do, which is hockey specifically and sports in general, having a chance to meet some of the big stars of all the other various sports, you know, would be a treat for anyone, even a guy like me who used to rub elbows with those folks.
You say that with such humble words. You've obviously given your much of your adult life to the sport of hockey, and congratulations on being inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame in 2018. That must have been quite an honor for you.
Quite a surprise for a kid from Dorchester, Mass, who, as I say, in 1958 was skating on my sister's white skates with toe picks. And I think at that time, most American boys would have been looking at trying to play baseball or football or going on to their local college and starring, you know, in basketball for their team. But with me, it was always from the moment I ever took my first strides on the ice at the Boston Arena to skate and then to play hockey and then subsequently be still a part of the game was not just my adult life, but almost all my life.
Yeah, I mean, you had a career as a player, and I use this term lovingly, as an enforcer for the WHA. You played for Cincinnati Stingers and for the Quebec Nordiques. What was it like playing on the WHA in those days? Because that was a real fledgling league, right?
Well, in 1972, when many of the players who were acknowledged and excited about playing in the 72 series found out that a new league was forming, you started to see the attitudes of others who felt that the NHL, with their 12 teams, then I think they were adding 14, was the be-all and the end-all. And as we know from history, that a lot of great players never got to the National League. Fellas like Barry Ashby, who later went on and won Stanley Cups with Philadelphia, he told me once it took him 12 years to get out of Hershey. And you look at a guy like Don Cherry, who only played one game in the National Hockey League and spent most of his career in the American League. When the WHA came along and when Bobby Hull jumped and gave it some validity and some solid publicity, it offered an alternative to many players. It opened the door, certainly for American players, and yet we still had the minority job. You were either a key guy like a Tim Sheehy from Boston College, or Larry Plough that had played in Montreal, or Bobby Sheehan. And you would see others, fellows like myself, Nick Fatiu, Paul Holmgren, and others, that Jimmy Troy was one, and Kurt Walker. We were the tough guys. That was our job, and we couldn't get out of that cast iron mold.
Yeah, well, I was growing up a Boston kid in the 70s, and you know how impossible it was to get Bruins tickets back then. So my dad used to take us to the New England Whalers at the Garden. And
yeah,
I was a huge WHA fan, and it saddened me when the league folded and the merge came. But it got you a chance to play in the NHL in 79-80, right?
Well, it did, and you were a kid that went to see, if you could, the Bruins at the Garden. I, too, did the same. I was fortunate along the way that my grandfather had been a coach and a referee in the NHL. My dad had a lot of opportunities to get us tickets, but mostly we went to college games. Then in, I think, 1971, a team came along in the American League called the Braves. And that's
sure.
When I first laid eyes on a fellow that I would get to know a lot better as my playing career developed, Terry O'Reilly. And he was a guy that, you know, certainly earned his stripes, so to speak, working his way up in the American League, playing for Beth Gwinlin, playing against Providence on a Saturday in March. I watched him, Bill Spear hip checked him, and he landed on his face, badly cut up. And my goodness, he just never quit. And I got to secretly admire the guy. And ultimately, when I did get to the NHL as a WHA draft pick out of Cincinnati to Quebec to play for my old coach, Jacques Demers, my first game and my first fight was with Terry O'Reilly.
Was there any ill will towards the new teams that came in from the WHA, towards the established NHLers? Did they have any ill will towards the newer teams?
Well, I think that they thought that we probably weren't as good as they were. And yet, and they stripped a lot of the teams, the NHL did with the dispersal draft. But it's interesting, a lot of people don't realize this. So Glenn Sather told the NHL, and Peter Pocklington told the NHL, that he was keeping Gretzky and Messier, and if they didn't let him keep them, they weren't joining the league. And people really didn't realize that it was a bluff because of the fact that where would Edmonton have gone? What league would they have played in?
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Well, there are a lot of interesting facts about the history of the game. You know, the night that Frank Mahovlich was sold to Detroit for $1 million, and all of that came about. you know, and so many other things that happened in the boardroom and behind the scenes. But that was the way that they did business. And it was a Canadian run, and it still is a Canadian league. And the fact is that when you look at the officiating department, the minority is still American. And it was that way with me. It certainly affected mine and others' pension that are American. But we get Canadian dollars. And that's a screwing unto itself.
Yeah.
I don't know how the management sleeps when they look at my 20 years in the league as a player and as a referee, and I get $20,000 Canadian.
Well, that goes all the way back to, like, the Alan Needleson and Bobby Orr fiasco and the whole...
It was Clarence Campbell and some of those other people, Clint Smythe and the Norris family and others that made it happen. And the sad thing is that the present administration hasn't done anything to rectify it. And, you know, ultimately now I have to, at my age, work, you know, many different occupations to try to make a living because the league and paying some of these guys all the millions that they pay them don't have enough to subsidize guys like me who helped build and maintain the league for 20 years.
Right, the people that really built the league in the last couple decades are...
Okay. There are no shoulders to cry on, yeah. But it's just a fact of life, and that's why when... You know, when we see what the NFL did with their concussion suit and what the NHL did with theirs, you know, it's almost comical to realize that the average payout to the NHL player was $22,000.
Yeah, that is a shame. Now, in terms of your playing career, you know, I was looking over your stats this afternoon. I noticed you had 505 penalty minutes in your NHL career, but you scored 7 goals. So I'm not going to really talk about the penalty minutes because I'm sure everyone asked you about who was your toughest fight and who you like to brawl with. But the 7 goals, do you remember the 7 goals?
My first WHA goal was against Hartford. It was the Whalers. They had moved to Hartford. It was against a goaltender named Louis Levasseur. I was playing left wing with Richie LeDuc, a centerman who had played for Boston and played for the Braves. And he went in and took a shot, hit the post. The rebound came out, and I snapped it in. The winger that was checking me, I had left him at the blue line. I tapped him with a little bit of an elbow. It was a guy named Johnny McKenzie.
Oh, Pie McKenzie, sure.
So that didn't sit too well with Hartford. And about 5 seconds after that goal was scored, over the boards came Jack Carlson of the famous Hansen brothers of Slapshot fame. and Bill Friday was the referee, and we had a toe-to-toe fight that some say was one of the best they ever saw.
Now, in terms of your fighting, is there someone that you were surprised that dropped the gloves with you, that was a star player or somebody that was kind of a not as tough guy that went toe-to-toe with you? Do you remember any of those type of people?
Well, my roommate, Bill Gilligan, was the captain of Brown. And one day in practice in Cincinnati, and he was a good player and tough, but not the biggest guy you ever saw. He turned around and asked me for some water, and I squirted him with the bottle, and he didn't like it. And we started to fight, and we were roommates. When practice was over, I had to stay out, do extra. And, of course, I went in after and said to the trainer, "Where's Bill?" And he told me that Bill told me to go take a hike. and I said, "That's great, but I don't have a ride home now."
That's funny. Now, how about in the games? Anyone that you went against?
Well, there were a number of guys that necessarily would come after me, and they pretty well were trying to set the pace or make a name for themselves. But along the way, I pretty well decided that there was no real future in fighting guys that weren't fighters.
Yeah.
And I pretty well stayed with guys like Wensink O'Reilly, Jonathan Holmgren, McElargy, Paddock, Cunningham, you know, fellows like that Larry Playfair, Samenko.
Dave Schultz?
No, he and I were friends from the University of Pennsylvania. There was no reason to fight. First of all, we're not going to prove each other that we're one's tougher than the other. And the other thing was, I liked him. I thought he was a good guy, and I admired his grit and his working ethic, and overall, I never went out to fight only to fight. I went to play, and if things happened, then I would do what I did best, which was I did fight. But I had trained with Vinnie Marino in Southside Gym and sparred with a lot of different people, Marvin Hagler, and in Philadelphia, Joe Frazier, and Mustafa Muhammad Ali's brother in Cincinnati, and Aaron Pryor, and Bill Duffy taught me how to fight in the old Garden, New Garden Gym.
Okay.
And so not a lot of people wanted to try me. And if they did, they did. And I did lose a few rounds, but I never lost the war.
Well, I've seen you up close and even today, and I wouldn't try you.
My wife has no problem with me.
Okay.
she twists her little finger.
I'll let her fight the battle.
There you go. There you go.
Well, we're speaking with Mr. Paul Stewart. He is a 2018 inductee in the United States Hockey Hall of Fame, and he's a former NHL player. And after his NHL career, Paul, you went and officiated over 1,000 regular season games, almost 50 playoff games, Canada Cup games, All-Star games. You had an illustrious career as an official.
Yeah. Overall, the career, you look at all the different things and you say, how do you feel in retrospect? And I never really feel bad for a day like today when it rains.
I know. It's cold and rainy today here in Boston.
And the arthritis starts to kick in. But, you know, I remember every fight, every stair I step up.
What was it like officiating players that you had, guys that you had played with and against? Was that difficult initially?
No, I think it's the same formula for being a player as it is for being an official. You go out and try to earn respect from the people that you're up playing against or those that you're officiating, and then what you try to do is maintain and continue to earn the respect. You can't never demand it. The people that demand respect have a too high of opinion of themselves. And I went out and I gave people 100% every night. And I acknowledge that I would make a mistake or two here and there. But what I always tried to do is get into the proper position and make a good call based on what I saw up close. And that demanded my ability to skate, which I always look back to Jacques Demers and Andre Boudrias as two fellows that really worked with me on my skating. Another fellow, Billy Flaherty, who had coached Minnesota North Stars at a skating school. And I learned a lot. And I constantly practiced and worked at it. And there's one thing that no one can say, that I ever was lazy or that I didn't give you 100%.
Now, is it hard to turn off your competitive edge? Like if someone bumped you or you thought, someone was skating by and gave you a hip or an elbow, even in jest, and you want to turn around and go get going with them.
Well,
and you were officiating.
Kind of funny because I worked a game one night in Phoenix in a playoff game with Detroit, and Tverdovsky for Phoenix grabbed the puck, and all the players for Phoenix reversed direction to break toward Detroit's end, and a local guy, Keith Kachuk, turned into me versus going into the middle to take the pass off his backhand. And when he did, he was only about 3 feet ahead of me. And with closing speed, me at my top speed and him at his, we collided. And they say it took him about, 8 or 10 minutes to get off the ice. I was pretty strong. I had, when I was 16, 17, worked for Boston Ice, pushing 300-pound bars of ice, 144 bars to fill a tractor trailer. I used to do 4 or 5 trailers a night and crush the ice and manhandle it and all that. And then along the way, I boxed, and I used to work out pretty hard and had weights and hit the heavy bag a lot and all that. So I was fairly strong. But the key to anything, and Gordie Howe said it, when your legs go, your game's gone. And that was one aspect of my ability that stayed with me until I was in my 50s, and then I retired.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I knew it was time.
Yeah, I'm sure you're spending a lot of time on your legs, and you're playing a lot of doing back-to-backs when you're referee, and I'm sure it's difficult.
Yeah, the ice skating wasn't as tough as the travel, and then sleeping in the different hotels and eating various types of food and being here and being there. And then a lot of people, if you read my book, Yeah, Wanna Go, what it comes down to is that, you know, I had stage 4 cancer, and I refereed, and I was on chemo, and I never missed a game. So the fact is that there's a certain degree of toughness, and I liken it to something that someone once said to me. You can take the boy out of Dorchester, but you'll never get Dorchester out of the boy.
Well, that was a perfect segue, because I was going right to talk about your book. The book is titled Yeah, Wanna Go, YAWANNA, Go, ? And it is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it's been out for about a year. And you have one of your rivals wrote the foreword to your book, and that must have been thankful and impressed that Mr. Terry O'Reilly helped you out with that.
All he asked for was one book. And
did you ask him if you could read it?
Yeah, no, I knew his wife Judy could, but he's Terry's probably one of the most articulate, gentle, and sensitive guys I know, and quite caring guy. You know, we all certainly had a lot of prayers and feeling for him this past year with his sadness as his son passed away. So,
yeah, that's his son.
Dad. And, you know, and I had known that young fella since he was a little boy. Devin was a nice guy, and he was doing a good job as a councilman up in his town, up in the North Shore. And, you know, it all comes back to the fact that there's the game, and then there's the life, and then there's the family. And in this sense, you know, when one person hurts, we all hurt.
Now, you mentioned fighting with cancer. Has that been in remission now?
I've been cancer-free from my colon and liver since 1998, 99.
Congratulations.
And thanks. And then 3 years ago, when I was just back from Russia, I was the chairman of the KHL. I had a vertigo situation and couldn't get up. They did an MRI, and they found a golf ball in my head.
Hey.
So basically what it came down to was I had a tumor, non-cancerous but still bothersome, and that took some time, and then a little bit of the Irish skin and some sun from all those years, and so I had a little issue with that. But, you know, knock on wood, everything's pretty good. I'm still on this side of the divot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw you a couple of days ago, and you look fantastic, and I had seen
you
a couple of years before, so I think you look just as good as now as you did a couple of years ago when we met at the Muscular Dystrophy Association event.
Sure.
In Boston, so.
I sell commercial roofing for a company called Tecta America. I'm a salesman here in New England. I have a big territory and constantly looking at commercial and people's roofs to see what we can do and help them out. And working as I did with the NHL and working as a student to go to the University of Pennsylvania Groton School, I only go to the best. The company I work for is the best.
Well, you're in the perfect area of the country for that, because everyone always needs roofs, especially.
It's not a sexy buy. And
no,
it's not an impulse.
I've worked in the building industry for a while, and I work in the industrial plumbing supply company now, so I kind of know the markets, if you know what I mean. But
sure.
So now, are you still working with the ECAC as director of officiating, or is that ended?
That ended after 12 years. I'm still the co-commissioner of the private school league, ISL, and busy signing those games. You know, they start up, and all those schools have fantastic facilities. They have great campuses, and of course, they have players of ability, such as, you know, you look last night and you see the Bruins playing, and you see, a couple of the guys on the Bruins defense, you know, played Belmont Hill, played it there. Another guy, that was playing for Pittsburgh, scored a goal. Paul, Marino, he had a play, a good play last night. He played at Harvard. So we have good hockey and good hockey players around here. We have good coaches. We have very good officials, but our numbers are dwindling because of the parents, because of the exorbitant amount of time that some of these groups make us go through to pass tests and things. When I was a referee, we didn't have all this malarkey. And it's ridiculous. And this is why games are going to go dark, because they won't have officials, not only in hockey, but in basketball, soccer, football. All the sports are suffering because in sports and in the world today, everybody gets a trophy, everybody's entitled, and everybody's mama's boy. I saw the cop tackle the kid in was it Bridgewater today on television, and the kid was vaping and disrespected him and wouldn't give him his name and tried to run, and the cop tackled him, and of course the cop's wrong. And you know, this is our society today.
It's a different world than when we were growing up.
No, that's why I liked it when I played, you know, nose to nose, man to man.
Well, now let's talk a little about autographs and getting autograph requests, because we are a podcast that, you know, we talk to collectors. You and I met at the collector show in Wilmington, and as I said, you had so many people. I was thrilled to see how many people came up to you, were getting autographs on pictures, on your books. And I noticed that you don't have a hockey card from when you were a player, huh?
Well, somehow or another, it came out that I did have a card, but they never published it like, you know, that I was a regular, you know, because they sent me up, they sent me down. I was never one of those star guys. But then I got to be a referee and I had my own card. But the only thing that really mattered in this, I told Gary Bettman this, you know, you take my name off my sweater, no big deal. But just remember, you can get my name right on that check. And primarily, you know, a lot of people have accused me of being such a colorful guy and always wanting to be the show and all that. I was just an enthusiastic guy and loved what I was doing. And people misinterpret, or they, you know, they nowadays you say red and they call you communist. So anything that happens nowadays, people twist it, turn it, and use it for or against you. And primarily what I've found is that I was a guy that liked to let the players play. I like to see the game played quickly. I like to see flow and action. And regarding my own popularity and other things, you know, I was out there. And I was a big guy, and I had a career that caused people to scratch their heads as to why I became a referee, you know, with all the penalties I had. But what it comes down to is that I had a pretty good life, pretty good career, and I'm not really too worried about my ego or my spot in life. My children's book, which we were selling as well at the trade show, is called The Magical Christmas of Paul Stewart, and it's about my first pair of skates, and that's also on Amazon. That profit goes to help inner city kids get skates.
That's fantastic. I mean, what I noticed, that, you know, the couple of times I've seen you at events is that you're always so outgoing and various, especially with the kids. When they come up, you shake their hands, you know, they're a little nervous to see you. And you must be friends with everyone, because everyone that came up to you was shaking your hand like you hadn't seen them in 5 years, but you were catching up. And, you know, it must be nice to, you know, even you've been retired from playing and refereeing for a while, but people still want your autograph and still want to talk to you and interact with you. I'm going to think, well, you feel nice.
It's interesting. I'm a student of history, and Will Rogers said, I've never met a man I didn't like the first time. And and what it comes down to is that I think that people who take the time and make the effort and actually pay our salaries are the people that deserve some recognition and some attention. And it's not so much for me. I'm the same guy as I was when I was a kid in Dorchester. I'm just a little bigger and a little older.
Now, do you get many requests through the mail? Do people send you pictures or things to sign through the mail?
Oh, yeah. And I remember my grandfather talking about all of the great stars that he knew, Babe Ruth and Ted Williams and all those. And I always thought it was funny that Bill Russell wouldn't sign autographs. And yet now, as he's in his twilight years, he does do it. And perhaps it's the money, and perhaps it's a change of heart. But I think if that's what people want, or they just want to shake your hand or say hello, I mean, these are the folks that filled the stadiums that I made my living. And I can tell you that as much as it was for the dough, it was also for the fact that I had a chance to perform and do my thing. And that was a fulfillment of my boyhood dreams.
Well, it's very apparent when you're out there meeting people that you don't know or are out in public. Me as a public person appreciates that. Why don't you promote your two books again? Let people know where they can get them.
Sure.
And if you'd like to give your email address or any way to contact you, you're welcome to do that as well.
Sure. My email address is P, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, E as in Edward, W as in William, C as in Charlie, A as in Apple, T as in Tom, 22 at AOL.com. It's PStuCat22. That was my nickname. PStuCat22 at AOL.com. And my book is on Amazon. It's the autobiography You Want to Go Help with writer Chris Smith and edited by Bill Meltzer. And my children's book is actually written by Matthew Sherman. And Matthew Sherman is the son of my agent. And he came to me having read my Christmas story that I wrote and asked if he could turn it into a children's book. And I said he could, as long as the profits went to help inner city kids get a pair of skates. And that's what we do. So they were rapidly sold out the other day at the card show, and it's a good book. It's $10. You want to go paperback is $20, and the hardcover is $30. So if you have a book and you want to have it signed, you know, I can make arrangements to get that done, and we'll go from there. But it's a book about my life, and it's not just about you want to go fight me. It's my dad used to say, I'm going to Harvard tonight. You want to go? Or I'm going to Cornell. You want to go? And as I conclude the preface, I say, if you'd like to read more about what my life has been about, take a walk through it with me. Turn the page if you want to go.
Well, Mr. Stewart, thank you very much for your time today. As I said, we're talking with Paul Stewart, who was a former NHL and WHA player. He was officiated in over 1,000 NHL games. He got inducted to the United States Hockey Hall of Fame in 2018. He's an author. He's written two books. Are they both available on Amazon?
Oh. Yes, they are. And as well, my column on hockeybuzz.com is written, and it has covered a myriad of subjects over the years. I have to do some with that Grotman Penn education, you know.
Well, you're doing just fine. From a kid for Dorchester, you've built quite a resume, both, you know, professionally and as a man. So I appreciate your time today. As I said, his book is You Want to Go. It's available on Amazon, and I saw it on Barnes & Noble as well. So please, you know, if you're listening, check it out. Make a purchase, send it off to Mr. Stewart, and I'm sure he'll sign it. He'll send you a nice letter of regards. If you have any pictures or anything you want signed, he always signs through the mail. He's involved in all sorts of charity efforts out in the New England area. Do you make it up to Canada or any other parts of the country?
Well, my son goes to Stansted in Quebec, and he's a grade 12 left defenseman playing for Dan Polizzini at Stansted College Preparatory School. And my other son is actually matriculating at Harvard, and he's taking courses there, and he referees. So I've got one ref and one playing.
But yeah, future professional.
Well, he's getting paid now, so I guess that makes him a pro.
All right, great.
I demand a lot from him.
I'm sure. Well, I want to again thank you for your time, and it was a pleasure speaking with you. And you have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Right,
I know.
Thanks.
Well, that wraps up another edition of TTM Cast, the podcast for the TTM Autograph Collector. I'm Jeff Baker, and I've been your host for the program. I'd like to thank Mr. Paul Stewart for his time for joining us on in the program. Hopefully you found his interview as interesting as I did. Our next show will be Sunday, January 19th. And if you have any feedback or are interested in being a future guest on a program, just send me a quick email at ttmcast@yahoo.com. As always, I'd like to thank you, the listener, wishing you many happy returns.